Joe Dunlap, a class of 1966 graduate of Morro Bay High School and a U.S. Navy veteran, has been a student of World War II history for more than 40 years. His areas of specialization include the Richmond, California shipyards and the U.S. Navy and Army base at Morro Bay, California, where troops trained for South Pacific landings. The Morro Bay Detachment, Training Command, Amphibian Forces Pacific Fleet Landing Craft School drilled as many as 16,000 troops daily. Come along and join Joe Dunlap on the Morro Bay waterfront as he shares informative insights about Morro Bay's vital role in World War II.
Right about where we're sitting right now was a temporary dock that was actually used to store the amphibious landing craft when they weren't in use, which wasn't very often, by the way.
And that was the Higgins landing craft?
The Higgins landing crafts, the LCVPs, which are the wooden boats, and the LCMs, which were the steel boats.
And those are really iconic. Anybody that even watches any historic footage of World War II, landing Guadalcanal or your Normandy or whatever, you would have seen those landing craft.
Exactly. Ubiquitous, to say the least. They had 175 of them here in Morro Bay.
Right here, as we're sitting literally hanging over the water on the waterfront, it's as peaceful as you could imagine, and yet it was a frenzy of activity right here during World War II, a major facility. Tell us about the mission and the scope of what happened here.
Well, it certainly was. It was, on any given day, this place was absolutely just crawling with U.S. Army personnel.
And Navy.
Yeah, the Navy itself provided the coxswains for the boats, and the training went right off of the piers. The whole idea was to practice disembarking from a troop ship into landing craft.
They made a dummy wooden three-story, like a simulated side of a troop transport.
In late 43, they began the program here. But up until that time, Morro Bay was actually just a base for patrol craft. Late 43, as the island hopping campaign in the South Pacific began in earnest, they began training troops here for those assaults.
There were troops that were stationed here, went through the drills, went through the training, not knowing where they were going to ship out, but within months or weeks, they were in the South Pacific, landing on Tarawa or Guadalcanal.
Exactly, yeah. Beginning in about January, the training really began to ramp up. And the research that I've done, I found there were at least four major divisions that train in Morro Bay. And of those four, three of the divisions went to the South Pacific and one went to Europe, although they did not participate in D-Day. They went there in February of 45. That was the 7th Infantry.
Okay, so the troops that trained here did not subsequently go to Normandy D-Day landing.
That's correct, yeah. Basically 75% of them went to the South Pacific. The most well-documented one that I found was the 88th Infantry, I believe it was, whose commander made sure that it was well-documented both on paper and in photographs.
At any one point of time during the training, how many troops were based here?
They were actually based at Camp San Luis, and they would come out here on a daily basis, either by truck or on foot. A lot of times they were marched out here.
And weren't some of the troops, didn't they come down from Camp Roberts in the north as well?
I don't know. A lot of that stuff is hidden in a box somewhere in a large building somewhere buried.
But we do know
very likely.
But this was an adjunct, basically, of Camp San Luis Obispo.
Pretty much, yes. They would come out here and spend an entire day training. And if you look at the photographs, you notice that most of the scaffolding on the piers was lit, which probably means they got here in the dark and went home in the dark. When you were training an entire division, that's 15,000 men. It takes a while to get them all over the side, back to land, and do it over and over again.
So any given day during the training, how many troops would be here? Just rough guess.
I would estimate somewhere anywhere from 8,000 to 16,000.
In one day, at one point in time in Morro Bay. That's astounding.
Yeah, and they would come out here in just convoys of trucks and be disembarked from the trucks and lined up and marched out to the piers and up the ramps they would go and then down over the side on the rope ladders.
My primary training was debarkation from the troop transport into the landing craft. Yeah. Then tell us about that simulated process that took place here. Once they got in the Higgins boats, tell
Once
us what happened.
In the Higgins boats, they had two options. If the weather was good, they would actually go out through the entrance to the bay, around the rock to the north side of the bay, and practice an assault on the beaches up there. And one of the objectives that they used to use was the old Cloisters Inn, which at that time had already been abandoned. And it was used as a quote-unquote enemy outpost that they were assigned to capture. If the weather was bad, they would stay within the confines of the bay and make landings on the east side of the peninsula.
Did they have physically enemy simulated troops that would be on shore waiting for them?
I don't know if they had a...
Like a red team?
Yeah, like a red team. I assume that they did. I haven't found anything in the research that I've done that says as much. At the south end of the bay, there was a lot of activity down there towards Los Osos. Basically, at the base of the peninsula, there was a lot of live fire activity out there.
Down on the sand dunes.
In the sand dunes, yes. A lot of heavy stuff down there. Artillery, the Navy brought in aircraft and dropped large bombs, anywhere from 250 to 500-pound bombs.
These were dummies? Or
no, they were
live. Wow, yeah. So it was dangerous.
I think that was, from what I could gather in the pictures, that was mainly to expose the troops to what that kind of thing actually looked like.
And felt like, and sounded like.
So I'm sure the bay fairly well rocked with explosions during that period.
A little bit off subject, but I think I've encountered the archival photos of a simulated German village in the mountains above Camp San Luis Obispo. Have you seen those photos?
I have seen those, but I have never been able to actually place them.
Yeah, no, me neither.
None of the mountains, I haven't been able to actually match them up with what I see today.
Right. The other dimension of that, I've been told by 3-4 old-timers that they believed and thought there was a Japanese village north of Morro Bay in the mountains for simulated. Have you ever heard of that?
I have not heard that one, but I would not be surprised in the least. I do know that north of town, just before you get to the point and into Cayucas, that there were some gun emplacements up there, shore batteries.
And there's one myth and rumor which I've never found any credence to, is supposedly there being an emplacement on top of Morro Rock.
No, I can't imagine that at all. It would have been too hard to
get up and down
and staff it. If anything, maybe a lookout of some sort. But
that makes sense.
Yeah, that would be about it.
Yeah. Right here in Morro Bay, as we're looking out, there's the spit, the sand spit.
Yes.
In the photos that we both have from the U.S. Army Signal Corps show mortar emplacements, machine gun nests, foxholes, a lot of activity out there. What was that about?
That was basically training for amphibious landings.
So they obviously had somebody waiting for you when you came ashore then.
Oh, yeah. Especially in the South Pacific, the Japanese were waiting for them at every stage.
But right here in Morro Bay, they had machine gun nests and mortar emplacements waiting for the troops coming ashore. But we both saw the photos. They're there.
Yes. The only question I have is whether or not that was an enemy for them to meet or whether it was actually training on how to actually use the weapons.
Right. It could be, because there are a lot of photos of the Higgins boats coming ashore on the spit, offloading jeeps and offloading machine guns and whatnot. So probably you're right. They're probably hunkering down.
Yeah, that's very likely.
It wasn't just Morro Bay. We're looking out towards Montaña de Oro and Los Osos. There was training going on all the way down there. Tell us about that.
Yeah, the training actually extended, all, as far as I can tell, all the way from the tip of the peninsula all the way down to the base of it in Baywood Park. I would call it kind of a soft area between where the sand ends and the actual mountainside begins. There was a lot of activity up there.
What happened?
Well, there was training for mainly heavy weapons. Everything from 37-millimeter pack guns to 105-millimeter artillery pieces, bazookas, flamethrowers, you name it. There was also an anti-aircraft gun training down there, and they actually used some drone aircraft, which a little aside to that was the aircraft that they were using was built in Los Angeles, and one of the people that built them was Marilyn Monroe.
Wow.
When she was a teenager during the war, she actually worked in the factory making those.
One of the images I have from Army Signal Corps, they are towing in a trailer one of the drone aircraft that you saw.
Yeah,
that picture.
I actually have some pictures of them actually launching them from a catapult.
From where?
In Los Osos, actually launching it off the side of the hill up there.
So people think drones are new.
Yeah, they were radio-controlled aircraft, basically.
That's pretty cool. And then talk about the aerial bombardment that took place in Los Angeles.
Yeah, the Navy used F-4U Corsairs, TBF Avengers, to actually drop some fairly heavy ordnance down there. They were dropping anywhere from 250 to 500-pound bombs on occasion.
These were live bombs?
These were live bombs. It created one heck of an explosion. So the bay probably fairly rocked with noise at times down that way. I'm sure it probably shook windows all over the place.
Go back to square one, day one. It's Pearl Harbor, December 7th. Within a week or so, there are Japanese subs right out off the coast.
Yes.
And they sink the Montebello. I've talked to old-timers that they remember one of the torpedoes missing and hitting and blowing up Morro Rock early in the morning.
I've heard that story, although I hadn't heard the story of it hitting the rock. I had some neighbors of mine when I was a kid lived in Cayucas during that period, and they heard the explosion. But they were under the impression, although they didn't know for sure, was that the torpedo actually came ashore up in that area, probably in the rock area just south of Cayucas and just north of Morro Bay. But nobody knows for sure.
So you can imagine being a resident of the Central Coast in December of 1941, January, February. It was palpable, the feeling of an imminent invasion. There were people who left and relocated out of here.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised by that at all. The war hysteria after Pearl Harbor it was all up and down the West Coast, from Oregon all the way down to San Diego, from Washington State clear down to San Diego. And there was a great fear. The Japanese really, I don't think, ever had any real designs on invasion, but they weren't going to let us know that. The more fear they could instill, the better they felt about it.
But they did. They torpedoed, Long Beach and Goleta? Sunk the tanker right off of Cayucas.
Yep. Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, they'd anything to create fear and whatever damage they could do, which as it turned out wasn't a whole lot, but probably instilled more fear than it did any real damage.
Back to Morro Bay and training here, I hear different terms to describe the base here, and I've heard the formal name of Camp Morro and Camp Morro Bay. Do you know about that moniker?
Yeah, I haven't heard it actually called a camp. The original name for it was supposed to be a...
It was on a map that I saw that, an aerial that showed...
Yeah, there is a map. In fact, there's a good map of it right here in Morro Bay at the Veterans Hall. It was originally supposed to be a base for patrol craft. And that went on, it was originally established by the Navy just about a week before Pearl Harbor, when they broke ground for it.
And wasn't there plans to do some submarine maintenance work here originally,
there
too?
There was originally, but the biggest problem was the harbor is just too shallow for any kind of large ships.
Pretty narrow turnaround for a submarine. And then another nuance, right across the street where the PG&E power plant used to operate, before, that was Quonset huts and buildings there, and there was a swimming pool for training of troops.
Yeah.
What happened to the pool, and why did they take it out after the war?
I do not know what the reason was for that, other than it probably was deemed unnecessary. We had a big bay if you want to get people wet.
Post-World War II, during World War II, there were, 40 or 50 Quonset huts around in this right here along the bay?
Oh, yeah, there was probably close to 100 total. Right. Up on the bluff above where we're sitting right now, there was a large three-story administration building, and it was surrounded by Quonset huts. Some of them were large ones that were used for a mess hall and a recreation, and then the rest, smaller ones, were used for just barracks.
So some of them were repurposed after World War II. Many of them were sold as surplus and moved and relocated.
Yep.
I personally know of 5 right here in Morro Bay.
That's correct.
Tell us about the ones that you know about.
The ones that I'm most familiar with is the one down on the Embarcadero down near the south end.
Where the shell shop is.
Down by the shell shop, yeah. That one, when I was a kid, that actually belonged to a good friend of mine's father, Michael Teixeira. His dad and his uncle used it to store cars in. They had a body repair shop here, and they would also store some of their cars down in that building, and it's long since been repurposed. But that one and the other one that I know of is the one's kind of an antique shop just on right. Main Street.
And isn't the one further north on North Main, the kind of the, they did an Art Deco yeah, facade, the, that's why.
Yeah, it's kind of a nautical Art yeah. Deco design, yeah. yeah, that one out there.
Did they relocate that to there, or is that where it worked when it was functioning?
As far as I know, it was relocated out there, but I don't know for sure.
And then went from Cambria to Los Osos Valley Road, all around the county. If you look carefully at farms and ranches, you'll see classic World War II era Quonset huts.
Yeah.
Did they mostly come from camp here?
I would imagine so. Either here, I don't ever remember seeing any at Camp San Luis Obispo. There may have been a few, but most of Camp San Luis Obispo was wooden structure, of which there were literally thousands, and all of those were sold off at the end of the war as well. Back when I started at Cuesta College in fall of 1966, we went to school in those barracks.
Right. That's all there were for classrooms.
That's all there was, yeah. yeah.
So again, I forgot to mention that you're a graduate of Morro Bay High School, class of 65?
1966. Yeah. At the moment I'm in town because I'm going to be going to the reunion for the class of 67, which is where a lot of my friends were.
What, 67, you volunteered for service in the Navy.
In the spring of 1968, I decided to join the Navy, and I went in on the 9th of May, and I got out of the Navy on my father's birthday, February 18th, 1972.
And were you shipboard? What did you do?
Yeah, I was a machinist mate, which kind of fit with my passion for working on cars. Although the only thing that really transferred was which way to turn the screwdriver. Spent most of my time on board of a destroyer tender.
Where were you based? Where did you go to?
We did two cruises to the South Pacific. We went to Subic Bay in the Philippines, Hong Kong, and Yokosuka, Japan. And then just before I got out, I was transferred to a World War II era destroyer.
Cool. So then you came back to the Central Coast?
Yeah, I came back to the Central Coast.
You worked at Rizzoli's after that?
Actually went to work at a place called Alberton Motors, which was the last new car dealership ever to exist in Morro Bay.
Wow.
They sold American Motors and Renault. I kind of cut my teeth on those cars and later went on and went to work at a couple of other places and then ended up at Rizzoli's Automotive in San Luis Obispo, where I spent 20 years working for the family there.
And so your side passion is history, and specifically World War II history.
Correct.
And you're the author of a book about the shipyards in Richmond. Is that what
well,
it tells about your
yeah,
book?
Yeah, I'm an unpublished author. Let's clarify that. I haven't published it
yet.
I became deeply interested in it because my mother and father met in the shipyards in Richmond, California.
During
World War II. Yeah, my mother came from North Dakota, my dad came from Oklahoma, met in the shipyards. Basically, my mother was a what they call a slag chipper. She would follow a welder, an automatic welder, with a hammer and chipping the slag off the top of the wells, and my dad was right behind her painting over the weld, and that's how they met.
What was it that turned you into a passionate aficionado and student of World War II history and specifically Morro Bay Navy Army training?
I really became passionate about the history in general. When I was going to Cuesta College, I had a wonderful teacher there. I can't remember his first name, but his last name was Kelly. Terrific teacher. I couldn't get enough of his class, and I've been interested in it ever since. I think, like a lot of people my age, we grew up with World War II. The accounts of it, victory at sea on television and combat and 12 o'clock high and all the rest of it. And my wife used to tell me, she says, I think you were born in the wrong era. Should have been a part of it. I think that's where it came from. My one regret is never having really asked my parents about their time in the shipyard. It never occurred to me until after they were gone. And I deeply, deeply regret that. I wish I had spent more time asking them about their experience. Because of that, I started investigating and researching activities in Richmond at the shipyard there, which turns out that Richmond was the most prolific builder of ships during World War II. They
mostly Liberty ships?
Built Liberties, they built Victories, they built LSTs, and they built troop transports, which were a derivative of the Victories. And they built 747 ships, which, when you work it out the math, that's about a ship every day and a half for the entire time that the United States was in World War II.
This was Kaiser mostly?
This was Kaiser Permanente, and that was just one shipyard.
Back to Morro Bay, I know you saw the picture I came across of the crash boat that was training in Morro Bay. Yeah. Did you learn any more about what that was about?
I have not. I have been searching for more information on it. In fact, I was very surprised by it because up until that point, the only thing I had heard about was the activity of the Navy and the Coast Guard here. In fact, the base here changed hands a couple of times between 1943 and the end of the war, with the Navy administrating it at first, and then they handed it off to the Coast Guard, and then in 1944 it came back. They did a dual administration to the end of the war.
So the crash boat, for the listener, was a rescue vessel, high speed, that would race out and try and save a downed pilot once they crashed in the sea.
What was unique about it was operated and administrated by the U.S. Army Air Force,
right. Which
is something I had no idea that the Army Air Force had anything to do with what went on here.
What a pleasure, Joe Dunlap, to talk with you and meet you.
Oh, thank you very much, Thomas. It's been a pleasure.
Mine too. To learn more about you, do you have a website? How does somebody learn and see more about you?
I post occasionally on Facebook.
I see your great posts there.
I write stuff as it comes into my head, and I've become an amateur writer, which...
Well, you do some great photo posting, too. Historic photos.
Yeah, historic photos, and I spend a little time trying to analyze the photos and try to lift as much information out of a picture that I can before I write about it.
So the best is to follow you on Facebook?
Yeah, pretty much.
What's your name on Facebook?
You just look for me. My name, Joe Dunlap. Of course, there's more than one, but you'll recognize me because the avatar that I use is a picture of me with my blue 1972 Ford Pinto that I used to autocross.
Joe Dunlap, graduate of Morro Bay High School, 1966.
66, yes.
What a pleasure.
Extreme pleasure for me, Thomas. I follow your posts from all over the world, which just absolutely fascinates me, not to mention makes me very envious.
Very good. What a pleasure. I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from the waterfront in Morro Bay, California.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com. Our associate producers include Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, Kim Schneider from Michigan, Elaine Masters in San Diego, Julie Henning, Eugene, Oregon, and Steve Cook, contributing from Little Rock, Arkansas, host of Arkansongs on NPR affiliate KUAR.